Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good evening. Welcome to Comic Pod episode 36. It's finally time, although it's been quite recently released, to talk about Logan. I'm back for this. It's been quite a while. It feels like I've been away a year, but it's only been about a month. But I couldn't miss this one and want to get back regularly. So I'm your host for this evening, Rory Greenfield. As always, Mr. Reliable. I don't know if I've ever called you that before.
I don't think anyone's ever called me that before.
Well, there you go. Stuart Bridson, how are you doing, Stu?
Yeah, I'm good. As we mentioned on the last one, Rory and I have been going to a counsellor. And we're trying to work through our difficulties, so you'll just have to bear with us.
It's bloody expensive, so we're kind of maybe angling towards Fight Club instead, or I don't know, some kind of stress relieving, you know.
Be very careful where you go if you're talking about stress relieving activities. This is how very dangerous rumours get started. It'll be all everyone's talking about around the water cooler at AI Towers. I don't need that kind of publicity.
We've already had enough bad publicity in our time. So yeah moving swiftly on.
AI Towers.
Do you know what? He's got a ton of these. What was it you were saying about the gag standing chopper the other day?
It's his plain air gags one. that's how he gets round, you know, while he's unemployed and he's just bumming round at Comic Cons. He's just taking air gags one.
Yeah, he says it's like Birmingham Comic Con, but he was actually in like Manila and then Lagos. And he's just basically been looking through like Captain America cities and just picking it on a map and just going, you know. Yeah, it's just been
that's what happens when you've got crazy podcast money. That's just the life that you live.
Exactly, and we don't see a penny of that money.
No.
Moving swiftly on again, joining us is the dual host of the main AI pod. He was on the preview and he's very regularly on this podcast and very well liked and appreciated. Wow. For his knowledgeable,
moderately tolerated.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be nice. I've not been on one of these for a while, so I don't want to start.
It's okay, you can still be a massive bitch.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so we have to put up with him again. It is Marco Lopez.
I'm going to just sort of take the lead from what you guys said about your counselling, and I'm going to suggest anyone who is going to, you know, I saw lots of questions about did people cry about this film, and yes. I think you people who question did you cry about this film, you people have problems. Why do you need to ask this question? Why are you ashamed about this? Please go and live some life, because if you cried, awesome, then you're real.
If like, you didn't cry, then you are dead inside.
The best thing is someone tweeted and said, "Oh, we're crying about comic book characters." I'm sorry, fuck off. Okay, this is a real fucking movie.
Whoa! Don't tell our listeners to fuck off. We've only got three.
No, we've just lost two of them.
In fact, actually, it's us three.
Might get Jeremy Connors occasionally, but we're going to struggle to, you know, that's four. And if we just tell one of them to fuck off, then, I don't even know if I'm going to listen if someone's telling me to fuck off 2 minutes in.
The chair was moderately tolerated. So
No, exactly. No, that is a very valid point. I think, you know, we're here to talk about Logan. We're here to lavish it with incredible praise for what a wonderful film it is. We've all got different angles about what we want to talk about. We've all got things we really want to discuss, because it's do you know what? And we were just talking about this prior to coming on, and Marco makes a great point. It's not about that it's a comic book film. It's not about that it's, you know, an X-Men based film or produced by Fox or Hugh Jackman's last film or Patrick Stewart's last film, anything like that. Just putting that out there, this is a spoiler podcast. I've already spoiled two things if you were listening, but at least our four listeners actually have watched the film, so I think we're safe. But we're going to talk about the film in depth and going to be very honest and frank, and we're going to talk about what happened. So notice that now before you go any further. And if you haven't gone and seen it yet, just stop and go and watch it. You know, just leave your workplace, leave your wife and kids at home, do whatever you want to do, just go and watch the film. Or leave your husband and kids. I'm not making judgments if we have a female listenership. Okay, so what I was talking about, it's a film that doesn't have to be put in a box or a genre, because it's just a wonderful film, and it's got real heart and emotion, and you can feel that from every single character in it. You can feel it from every actor that was involved in it, from the director, from the writers, kind of all the way through. I think it's probably one of the most genuine films I've watched in a decade. And that doesn't matter what genre it's in. And I think when we talk about films on this podcast or TV shows, or, you know, we all might, you know, this is what we like to talk about. So sometimes we're going to be maybe a little bit over praising of things. Sometimes we're going to be a little bit harsher than other people would be if it's not true to the material. But I think with this film, I think we're going to try and be as honest as we can, and give it its due deserves for what a wonderful film it is. I'm going to start with Stu and just get kind of initial reactions, because you two obviously praised it pretty highly, or expected it to be good. Did it exceed your expectations? Because it did mine.
Yeah, it exceeded them by light years. I knew it was going to be good. I suspected it was going to be great, but I didn't actually think that it was going to be a masterpiece. And I really do think it stands out as a masterpiece. As you two have both alluded to, it's not just a good comic book film. It's a fantastic film with great actors, great characters, a great storyline. It's compelling. It draws you in. It forces you to feel emotionally involved. You know, because this is a character that we followed for 17 years in real time. That's almost half my life has been Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And I cried at the end. No problem with saying that. And I'm pretty sure the next time I watch it, I'll cry again. I can't praise it enough.
That's extremely high praise. Marco, do you feel similarly about the film?
So you remember in the preview I said, I think this is going to be, if we really have to compare it or stick it into boxes, it's going to be the best. It's going to be X-Men film considered to be the best, but not necessarily the most successful. So far I'm right, because in terms of if you believe such things, critically it's got the best score, and it's still behind X-Men Apocalypse, Days of Future Past, and obviously Deadpool in the grossings. What can I say? This is a masterpiece. It has surpassed my expectations. It's redefined what films using comic book films could and should be. Comic book characters, excuse me. In my opinion, and here's some controversy for you now already, up front. I think the MCU could learn from its bravery and its high stakes and character focus. I think the DCEU could learn from its superb execution and consistency in tone and narrative development. I related to this film. I laughed, I cried, I hurt. I wanted to see one of my favorite characters at peace at the end. I melted at Laura's grief, and I think it's important that, you know, throughout the film you relate to her as Laura, not as a code. Logan's passing from Wolverine into redeemed hero. He didn't save the world, but he became the world to someone, and he allowed a group of mutants the chance to live, to choose to live. Not since The Dark Knight have been so affected by a film using comic book characters. And I think it's emotional points that, just like Stu echoed, are as hard hitting as that of many films that often have Oscar statuettes on their shelves. Why? Because, well, just like Stu's mentioned, I mean, for much of that film, I was Logan. I mean, his emotions, his battles, his guilt, his scars, his fatigue, it resonated with many experiences I've had in my own life. And fair enough, maybe I'm not running around, you know, escaping from dangerous scientists with claws in my hand, but this echoed the battles we fight in our lives. And seeing this film hold up this eerie, familiar view to these struggles was actually quite cathartic. And it served as a balm to the wounds of life itself, no matter how menial we think they are.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and I think I might just close the pod.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Why bother?
He's just done a K, hasn't he? He's just done this incredible speech, and then you go.
That's not a speech. That's a fucking monologue.
I know. Are you accepting an Oscar on their behalf? That sounded like an Oscar winner's speech, right there.
I hope you have no idea how much you know. One of the things I really want to put across in this pod.
Yeah.
I want people to stop calling it comic book genre. In fact, if we carry on saying comic book genre, all we are doing is if that thinking continues, we'll never move past the seating Logan has exposed. We'll never do it. Like, comics are not a genre in film, in a story. Comic book characters just happen to be characters in a film. We have to move past the genre. We have to, like, you've mentioned it before. Winter Soldier is an example. It's an espionage film. This was a road movie. This is a Western. This just happened to have comic book characters. This was a drama. If we want to box it, then this is never going to get the recognition.
It's a drama, man. It's a drama. I mean, my favorite films of this type are often quite violent as well, but they're often involving being on the road, you know, and almost discovery films and adventure films in a way, but in a different tone. So Road to Perdition is one of my favorite films. It's Paul Newman's last film. It's an incredible cast again, like Tom Hanks. And it's got a similar kind of tragic tale of, you know, of loss. And it's set in like 30s Chicago and kind of mob boss kind of era. And it's nothing like this film, but it's got similar traits in the emotional kind of output, and that film's won Oscars. That film's recognised as being a pioneering film of its time, and yet it wouldn't get boxed in a certain area. So I completely agree. There's, you know, I would say on that note, if we're dropping the comic, we are just the AI pod, which I don't think is quite as effective. But you know, we can go with it. We can try. I think we should start at the top because obviously we talked about the impact on us emotionally and otherwise. I think we need to talk about the film, talk about the characters. There's a lot to cover, so I don't know if anyone can listen or notice, but I'm trying to do my most professional approach to this podcast. Sometimes we love to just come on and chat shit and have a really good time, and I want to do that, obviously, as always, but it's kind of just, there's a lot of good issues, there's a lot of good talking points, and there's a lot to cover. So I'm going to try and keep me talking briefly, which people will be surprised about, and let these two guys talk. So opening the film, obviously you guys covered this on a preview, but it really did, for me, and I've not read much of the Old Man Logan comics, but I think it really did capture the feel of how Wolverine, how Logan was at that point in his life. You know, it's almost like he's battling with depression. He's clearly got suicidal tendencies. He's doing things that are selfless, you know, for the greater good, for the better of a man he respects and loves and wants to take care of, essentially. And it's not a Logan we're used to seeing. We've seen aspects of that, but I mean, Stu just focusing on Hugh Jackman, I think he absolutely nailed, you know, the whole thing, but particularly that beginning, because, you know, when he's there driving his car, doing things he doesn't want to do, it's selfless. And that's quite a rare thing from him, because in previous films and previous guises, he's been quite a selfish kind of character. So it's completely different.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice rounding off of the character. And as we said in the preview, you've got to bear in mind, this isn't just Logan aged 50. You know, this is Logan aged like 250, something like that. So he's seen a lot of things, and he's lived a life of violence. He's always had a mission and an objective and a fight. And there's always been someone to stab or someone to hunt down or something to do. And it's nice to see him trying to have some semblance of normality. He's quite content doing his little limo driving job. We obviously then find out why he's driving, because he's trying to get enough money to get the meds to keep Charles heartbreakingly in almost a medically induced coma, because Charles has become, as they say, he's a living weapon. You know, he's classed as a weapon of mass destruction. And while they didn't do the complete old man Logan, it was a very big tip of the hat to it, and it's hard to say that it was anything other than almost perfect. The way they did it, the way they captured the essence of a really jaded former superhero. You know, he won't even call himself Wolverine or the Wolverine. That's not who he is. He's just James Howlett. He's just Logan. That first scene really as well, it set the tone, didn't it? It starts off quite somber, and within a couple of minutes you've got blood, claws through the head, you've got limbs being cut off, and then it's quite the roller coaster ride, isn't it? From there you've got some huge highs packed with action, you've got some terrible lows where it's really emotionally draining, and I don't know what you think as well, but I enjoyed the ride. It would have been strange if it was all action. It would have been strange if it was all subdued.
It wouldn't have worked. You need a bit of a mix. And I think people coming into this film, a lot of them would probably want the X-rated action, because I think even, you know, in the trailer, it showed a bit of both sides of it. But I still think it pushed towards the action element of it. And I was really happy that it wasn't overloaded with action, and I was happy that, you know, Logan at that point is suffering. He can't heal like he used to, and he feels, you know, he's rusty as such. Do you know what I mean? Because in the other films, he's just a machine. Do you know what I mean? He's flying around in terms of his leap and his athleticism and his power and strength and anger, and this is a different thing. It's almost an effort. Do you know what I mean? When those guys are jacking his car, he's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Do you know what I mean? It's like a bad point on his Monday. Do you know what I mean? It's like he's having a shit day. It's not like it's very different. It's a really different character to what I'm used to. I think what surprises me most is it feels completely standalone, and you know, I guess the fact it's set 2029 and it's completely way ahead of the other timelines, although the X-Men timelines are the most confusing ever. It feels completely unique and separate to that. And I think that's the best thing about what they got out of the character, because I don't think this is a Logan that Hugh Jackman's played before, really. And I think it's pushed him to his kind of emotional limits. And I mean, you hinted at that, Marco, that, you know, really does push the buttons on the emotional, you know, impact that he's going through as a character through the whole film.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. Like the movie starts sort of straight out the blocks, first word fuck, and it just totally like hooked me from that point in sort of putting across this very somber tone. I wanted to say, even though it's clearly what he's doing is selfless, the funny thing is the film does enough to also portray in those early scenes that he's still trying to escape. He's actually pretty resentful of the responsibilities he's taking on. And I thought that was quite realistic because one of the reasons this was quite emotional for me is the fact that, well, I've seen something like what Charles Xavier was going through my own two eyes. I've had a loved one not recognize me for a year or two before she left this earth. And it's heavy. People who've seen loved ones go through Alzheimer's and dementia and all that stuff, it's you can't describe it until you go through it. And I say this flippantly, I suppose, but I mean, like, Patrick Stewart's portrayal is so on point, it's scary. The little things, the toilet scene, it seems like a throwaway scene. It's such an important scene in that film, because it just resonates massively with the extent of the mindset of Logan, the character of Stewart in that whole process. It's just really, really, really powerful. And I mean, the familiarity of that just sort of echoed massively to me with the fact that this is not just, you know, Logan tired and Logan depressed and he's carrying around this adamantium bullet as a powerful reminder of his real intentions. I got two senses. The first one is the situation he's in, and the first quarter of the movie or third does very well to illustrate it. The strain the situation puts on the caregiver is almost as bad as the one suffering it in the first place. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, like, you also got the sense very, very powerfully that without any remaining purpose or quest, Logan would pretty much lose any reason not to use that bullet. And it's just it resonates so powerfully with the exposing the vulnerability of the character, and that's something I didn't expect this film to do as well as it did. Because I from that point I was emotionally hooked, and you know it's one thing to, like, this is not to be critical of the MCU, the fangasms that it produces are awesome, but this hit me, man. I felt this film in a very big way for those reasons.
Yeah, and it's completely different. Do you know what I mean? Those films, probably barring Civil War, which had a pretty heavy emotional impact in a few kind of pivotal scenes towards the end. This is different. Do you know what I mean? This is made kind of to be raw and emotional. And it's made knowing it's going to be Hugh Jackman's last film. Obviously, I think early doors when the script, I presume, was written, that, you know, they knew he was going to die. But, I mean, to me, it was a bit of a shock that Charles was also killed as well. I mean, Charles in this, like you said, Marco, he's a shadow of himself, you know, and you occasionally get a sense of, I don't know, you get the old sense of his, you get that kind of charisma and wit, but then you also get the elements that he is suffering, and it's hard to see him go through that, because I think everyone's seen someone go through difficult times, albeit maybe not in the same circumstances. And he was such a great mind, you know, that's what he is renowned for. And to see someone suffering like that and to see it kind of impact on those around him is tough to watch.
It's also hard.
Patrick Stewart in this. Yeah.
It's also hard to see a character who he's dedicated his life to helping other people.
Yeah, and mutants.
He's dedicated his life to mutant kind that other people gave up on, and now he's in such a sorry way that he can't be left alone. And as resentful as he is, he knows that Logan's doing the right thing, because eventually, when the memories start coming back to him and he realizes what happened in Westchester, that's when, I mean, he gets these huge pangs of guilt. And that was one of the moments that really got me. I mean, even just thinking about it, you get a little bit choked up, because again, he was this wonderful, selfless man who spent his life helping kids. And then he's responsible for the deaths of dozens and dozens of people. And Logan has realized the only way to stop him from beating himself up is to just drug him beyond recognition.
That's brilliant. Keep it
very,
in place.
Very hard. Patrick Stewart brilliant. Was just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Just very quickly, I wanted to say that I'm not going to spoil the comic, but that is one of the remixes from the comic that I thought was a brilliant plot choice. Brilliant.
Yeah, the way they killed off the mutants rather than the way they did it in the comic was
brilliant.
Very, very clever piece of writing.
I think as well, I mean, we're going to talk about the director and the writing, and you know, but if we're talking about Patrick Stewart, I'm talking about, you know, award ceremonies. I think the release of this film being after the Oscars and after the Golden Globes and after kind of Oscar season means that it will probably have gone so far off the radar by that stage that I don't think it'll be in the reckoning. I think it should be. I think things like cinematography and sound mixing and all those kind of technical categories, this film's incredible on those levels. But I think in terms of acting, I think Hugh Jackman is great. I think he's really, really good. But I think Patrick Stewart is on another level in this
film. Yeah, he is.
I think, you know, Patrick Stewart is one of the most charismatic British actors, you know, going. But
When he dies, there will be like a period of national mourning. People joke about it, don't they, about National Treasure, but he really, really is. I mean, he's someone I grew up watching, because when I really first got into TV, there was Captain Picard on BBC Two.
You know, well, exactly. But he's crossed all genres. I think that's the thing with Patrick Stewart. You know, he's very known, like Ian McKellen and others, for their Shakespearean and their theatrical stuff.
He still does theatre stuff now, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's in incredible shape. He's an incredible guy. And this performance, to me, in terms of film, is probably the performance of his career. I just think he's so clever in his approach to the part. And obviously, this is all about Hugh Jackman and Wolverine and all that, and it's almost that it's gone under the radar that this is a huge thing for him as well. I mean, he's been involved in X-Men since day one as well, you know, and lesser involved in the more recent films, obviously, but still a huge pivotal part of that genre and Fox cinema and everything. And yeah, I think he was just truly and utterly magnificent. I don't think I can put it any different that way than that, really.
No, like, it is a shame. I mean, if this was coming out 6 months before the Oscars, I would be gobsmacked if this wasn't up for a couple of awards. One for Patrick Stewart as best probably supporting actor. And it must be up. You'd think it would be up for some kind of visuals or cinematography.
The technical categories, it certainly should be. I mean, films in this genre, and I'm not going to talk, you know, but that's what they would label it as. That's what they would label it as. And I think that's the kind of disappointing thing, because I think the only way, and heaven forbid, the only way for him to even get a potential nomination is probably if he died, because I think that's the only time they ever really take notice. And it's really sad, but it happened with The Dark Knight a lot. And, you know, there's some great releases and great films that have just kind of, they just don't push the buttons, you know, and I kind of, you've got to, you know, but they draw the audiences and they do well. And I think they've got different, you know, as long as they're getting the respect from people that respect film, then that's, you know, ultimately that's what counts. But I do think it's a performance that would be worthy of awards, because it is just wondrous. And I mean, you know, the cast as a whole, I wasn't going to talk necessarily about the kind of other characters in there, but the relationship between Hugh Jackman and Caliban, played by Stephen Merchant, for me is a funny one, because he's genius in this, and I look at it, the casting, and went, that's not going to work. Because I like Steve Merchant a lot, and he's known for being a very good writer, because he obviously wrote The Office with Ricky Gervais, and he's written a lot of good things. He's more of a stand-up, he's more of a writer. His acting career has generally not really existed that greatly, and I just feared that he would just not work. But his relationship with Logan Caliban is just, it's brief, but it's magnificent, because you get the sense that they're an old married couple looking after their granddad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Who they're forced to look after. Do you know what I mean? And there's jokes about his clothes. And there's jokes about, just, it's got a dark sense of humour, which the film does have throughout, that I think is needed, because I think anyone that's gone through difficult periods in their life in general, you have to have some element of humour about it. I think even Patrick Stewart, you know, his character is particularly happy to just be matter of fact about things, you know, and I think he was great. I thought he was a really good surprise package, really, in the film.
Yeah, he didn't seem out of place, and you can see why they put him in, because it was an odd pairing, but it's obviously it's a plot point, isn't it? They needed to have somebody in there.
He is a plot point,
but it works. It doesn't seem like too brazen a plot point. It's not like, well, okay, you can see why you've done it. It does make sense. And
yeah, it's again a compliment to the screenplay, I think.
Yeah. The fact that they've taken such a random casting and just dropped it in and gone, right, okay, see what you think of that, and it really does work.
Script always helps. I mean, that's the thing, you know. it does, though, because we talk about and you know, we find praise for other films in like from DC and otherwise. But the key is generally the script. We talked about that a lot of times. Like films like Ant-Man, which are a surprise package for us, is because the script is so good. And to me, that's because Edgar Wright was involved, and he's such a wonderful scriptwriter.
Well, it's paramount, isn't it? You could have the best cast in the world, the best director, the best producer, but if the script's garbage, if it doesn't tie together a good story, then what's the point? You know,
I'm Suicide Squad.
Yeah. I knew you'd say that. I fucking knew one of you would.
Deadpool would have failed if the script wasn't as good as it was. Do you know what I mean? Because it's all about the script. I mean, that film is an action-based film, but there isn't that much action. Do you know what I mean? And it's quite a short film, but it's all about the delivery and it's all about the script. But you can't get that kind of delivery from Reynolds unless you've got the script to back it up. Do you know what I mean? And the script is just, and the screenplay and the way it's shot is just, it's just incredible. And those scenes in Mexico, I just, like Marco alluded to, and like is known throughout the film, it's the modern Western, which took me bloody well by surprise.
And it makes the choice of Johnny Cash make even more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, and the director wrote and directed Walk the Line, which is the biopic.
Oh, did
Johnny
he?
Cash. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And that is, again, that's one of my favourite films. And if you want to see another film with real emotional kind of depth, and Joaquin Phoenix is just incredible in that film. That makes a lot of sense, because there are connotations if you go and watch that film and watch this, because obviously that's deep south of America, you know, the States, but you know, close to the border, and it's got that similar kind of dry feel about it, you know. It's a certain presence. I mean, that's what this film had. It had a lot of incredible things, but what it had throughout of it is it's so succinct, it's so coherent, everything makes sense. Often when you watch films that are over 2 hours long, there's a lull in the story, there's a pacing issue, it's too slow here, or it's too fast, or it's too this. I thought this was one of the films that flowed the best I've seen in a very, very long time. I think every scene was really purposeful. And it started from that beginning. It went into Mexico. I think then when Laura was introduced, it upped the action. It changed the dynamics completely. And then it becomes a different film. It evolves as it goes. I mean, going on to Laura, and I don't know if it was a jibe at my thing that you said before, Marco, about my agenda for this, but I wrote X-23 about a dozen times. But but Laura as a character, and Laura as an actress, she doesn't speak for an hour in the film, at least. And then she's got so much presence. Just
and then
with
she, steals the,
face.
She steals the show.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
and it's only
again,
the second thing that she's ever done.
Yeah, the casting is just genius. But she's brilliant in it. And I think her action scenes as well, you've got to say, were just stunning.
They were. Yeah. I think it was reminiscent of Chloe Moretz as Hit Girl in Kick-Ass, because it was so unexpected to get that level of ferocity out of such a young and such a slight girl. You know, there's nothing of her. you know, when you see someone like, obviously it's a bit of an unfair comparison, but when you see a grown woman like Scarlett Johansson doing some of the stunts that she does, it's fair enough because she's what, 30, you know, she's trained at this. She's 11 or 12 years old. And some of the things that she's done in this, I mean, her and Millie, but I think we said in the preview, her and Millie Bobby Brown could be two huge superstars in the future. I mean, they're already talking about Millie Bobby Brown now as taken over as young Princess Leia. God knows what Daphne King got lying ahead of her after this. You'd like to think that she's going to become the future X-23. Like, actual, the character grows up as she grows up.
I'd like to see that as well. I mean, I'll let Marco have a say in a second, but yeah, I think as a character, she plays it perfectly. But I think you do want to see some kind of continuity because people like Anna Paquin, who I know you're not a massive fan of.
No, she's on the list.
I know, it's a long list.
It is. It's getting progressively worse, I must admit.
But there's people that have got potential and then they're kind of underused in their careers and they go off in different tangents. And, you know, I think not everyone wants to stick to doing action films or doing this or do that or being typecast in a role. And you've got interesting actresses like Brie Larson, who does extremely indie, you know, heavy kind of emotional Oscar winning performances, and then will come and be Captain Marvel. And you've got, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, who does the same. She'll win Oscars for indie films and then she'll be the biggest star in X-Men or in other things. And I think it's good to see that within actors and actresses. And this girl, for such a young age and such a kind of fledgling career, is just delivers just one hell of a performance. I mean, I know you've been keen to enthuse about her, Marco, so what was your thoughts about her?
First of all, interesting fact, from what I could gather from interviews, Mangold deliberately cast her as not natively English-speaking because he was trying to get more story representation through body language and emotions, and in that respect, she nailed
it.
I mean, she doesn't say a word for the first half of the film. Let's just understand that. That's number one. Number two, and here's where I'll hit the note. It might be a good segue you can use as well, Rory. I'm sensitive to you as a host. But
at least somebody's on this pod because it's very rare that anyone is.
Yeah, lol. So my whole thing around the name and the X-23 thing, I found a very subtle theme popping up in the film around the exposition of father figures. So you've obviously got Logan and Xavier as a father figure relationship that's existed for a while. You've got this unwanted one between Logan and Laura. And while Laura is not necessarily referred to as X-23 by Xavier or Logan, I find it very interesting that Xander Rice is so almost paternal over X-24 in this very like pet kind of way.
And
I just thought, you know what, that's such an interesting juxtaposition against Laura, who, because I mean, like, you're introduced to her. Has she got rage issues? Yes. Is she suffering from loneliness? Yes. Forced to sink or swim, psychological scars, grown in the lab, self-harming. Does that sound familiar? Because it should. And fundamentally, I think what's really, really interesting is, first of all, you appreciate her over the film by her name, not by her code. Whereas X-24 is just, you know, as much as Xander Rice tries to sort of play this father card, it's like, that's just a thing. It's a grown test tube thing that's heartless and soulless. And ironically, it's what Logan does think he is of himself. I think he sees himself very much as Weapon X in the same way that Xander Rice sees X-24 as X-24. The reason the film comes full circle so powerfully is because by the end of the film, when Logan finally accepts her, he accepts her as Laura. He accepts her as, I mean, even though it's his DNA that's made her, and then theoretically it is his daughter, he only really takes her in as his daughter in that final moment. Same way, she only accepts him as her father in that final moment. And that's why it hits. That's why those tears, when they come down and you're sharing them with her in the film when you're watching it, if you've got any kind of soul, like, frick, that's why it's powerful, because you suddenly see that that thing come full circle in terms of, like, for me, the biggest thing about sort of her portrayal is that, you know, it's less, I mean, yes, it's very cool, all the powers and everything, and the clawfoot moment is one of the few action moments that I thought was, like, really fangasm, but, like, I just, it's the character of the girl. It's the tenacity. It's that argument in the car is so funny, and I mean, he's swearing at her, but it's so funny, and it's
wants to drive the car.
Yeah. Before that, when she's arguing with him, like, please take me to North Dakota, and he's saying, no, it's a comic book, it's not real. And then she punches him in the face. It's but like that's. It's so real. It's, guys, that's the thing. It's so, and that's why I love it. It comes out of this sort of element that's sort of very stereotypically comic booky, which I really, really loved.
Yeah, I love the references back to the X-Men comics, and I kind of love that, you know, that she sees him through the comic book eyes, and I think that's really clever, because he keeps referring back to, you know, they're just stories, and some of it was real, but most of it's made up. And yeah, I thought that was really clever.
And there's a nice little moment, isn't there, when he looks at one of her, he opens one of the comics,
yeah,
and he sort of brushes it off, and he goes like, "That's not how it happened." And you're sort of thinking, "Well, how did it happen? I wish we got to see it."
Yeah, I guess in the timeline, no one knows what's really happened in X-Men in the last few years, so it's just all there.
No.
I'm gonna coin fangasm, by the way, because I've not really heard that before.
Really?
One of our novelty T-shirts, too, that are being made. That's
hashtag
the one thing
fangasm.
We've asked for.
Yeah. I'll have a word with the
you can blame department.
Blame Marco, hashtag fangasm. Yeah, exactly. It's all there.
Hashtag bad news Lopez.
I'm just gonna say with kind of scenes, most of my favorite scenes are with her in it. I love the one when they stop to get fuel, to get gas, whatever you want to call it if you're American, petrol, diesel, whatever. And she's walking around after going on the, you know, the electronic machines,
yeah,
that kids drive you crazy to go on. Yeah, exactly. And she gets really mad at it when it stops. And he basically says, "One more go. You're allowed one more go." I've basically shouted at that at my children about 100 times. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so there's some parent relating there. But the scene when she's inside the petrol station shop and she's, you know, putting on the sunglasses and, you know, walking around in the crisps, and the guy stops her and she's about to basically take his head off. It's just like he has to stop her and go, "No, you don't do that." Do you know what I mean? And she just doesn't understand, you know, there isn't that kind of, because of what's gone on and because of being so isolated, and she has got humanity, but it takes a course throughout the film. And I think the evolution from there to the poor family that get massacred, when they're having dinner around the table, that's one of my favourite scenes in the film.
You just knew it was going to happen, didn't you? As soon as they entered into the frame, you just knew that something was going to happen with them. It was never going to be, "Come back to ours for tea. Oh, see you later. Thanks for stopping by." Someone was going to die.
We'll be pen pals in the future.
Yeah.
You know, hologram pen pals or whatever 2029 brings. But
was that your first comic pod prediction? Because that's my shtick.
It's like a Back to the Future prediction, isn't it? But yeah, I just think that scene when they're all around the table, they're almost like a dysfunctional family, because he says it's his dad and it's known as his daughter. You know, they assume as much. And they actually share a smile and a laugh. And
sign of normalcy, isn't it, in the whole thing? It's the first time they get to really sit down and just be.
But it's such a clever juxtaposition in the film, because
it's beautiful.
They're almost feeling normal and then massacre, and it almost becomes a different film. Like I mentioned before, you know, the evolution in the film, when X-24 gets introduced, he's almost like something out of a horror film, and it's so different that it goes from the pace changes and the style of film changes, and obviously they're then on the run, and I'll come back to the action scenes because there are, you know, a few to touch on, especially the casino that's worth talking about. But it's when, you know, Charles dies, and to me, I mean, that hit me almost as much as, I mean, the X cross really did hit me.
Oh, don't.
We're all going.
I'll get to that later.
I mean, that was genius. But Charles dying in his bed as an old man, being stabbed by someone he saw, and I'm glad there was a point where he could explain it wasn't him. Do you know what I mean?
Because that would have been so fucking horrible if the last thing he saw was that his son figure stabbing him. I mean, oh my God.
I know, but at least they had that moment, albeit there wasn't the poignant words, there wasn't the kind of big speech. And I mean, that surprised a lot of people that he had such a normal, non-heroic death, but I think that was what's made it so powerful, really.
Yeah, because he wasn't a fighter, was he? Charles was never going to die on a battlefield. He was never going to, you know, be killed by Magneto.
Him and Magneto in some grand, battle, exactly.
Yeah, because no matter what, whenever he's fought anyone, it's always been almost as a pacifist, hasn't he? He only does what he has to for the greater good. So, and it was nice. It was like Marco said before, it kind of really hits on a personal level. It's thinking he struggled for so long and now he's at peace. He doesn't have to wrestle with his conscience. He doesn't have to worry anymore. Is he going to have another incident when he loses control? He just gets to rest. And it was beautifully done. Strangely, I didn't think he would die. But there was a bit of a misdirection as well, because a lot of people, myself included, in the trailers thought that I thought he was going to be the one that was burying Logan. For some reason, I thought there would be some scene at the end where Laura and Charles were burying Logan, and maybe Laura would become like Charles's last student.
Yeah, I think it wasn't going to go in that direction. I think the big thing for me, and I was going to come on to it later, but the big thing for me is that the director got to tell his story.
Yeah,
and I think a big part of that was, you know, he did it his way in his style, and it's great that the studio allowed him to do that. I think it's very rare that, you know, obviously the actors were calling it time, and so that does help a studio's influence on the story. But
although, side note, Patrick Stewart said he would love to come on to Legion season 2.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But you know, I guess that's different. It's a different realm. It's TV and the rest
course,
of it.
Yeah.
But and you know, X-Men, like I keep saying, I make up timelines as they go. So I guess you could reintroduce them if you wish to. But I think it's great that the director got to do what he did and got to give his full vision on screen, because it's very rare that a director gets that kind of license. And I think 20th Century Fox is doing something. Taking aside X-Men Last Stand, what was the last one last year? The Apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
I've jumped back myself a few years.
I don't even know what timeline you're in.
I know, I don't. It's been a crazy week. But taking that aside, Deadpool and this are the two films in this AI book pod genre that allow a director to really put his full stamp on it and really get the most out of his actors. And I don't know, I think there's something really powerful in that, because we've seen directors shackled left, right and centre, not just in comic book films, in lots of different films and lots of different genres, where they can't really get their story across from risk of sequels or trilogies or merchandise or, you know, or whatever. And I just thought that was one of the most powerful things. And I think, Marco, you know, coming to you, I don't know, what do you take of my 5-minute rant on random director shit?
it's difficult, because I think you know, I'd almost maybe give I think maybe a little bit too much credit is being given to Fox here, because I think there's a lot of, if you reverse engineer it, there's a lot of reason to give Ryan Reynolds credit for Deadpool because of his fight. There's a lot of reason to give James Mangold credit for getting Logan he wanted. In fact, he had initially petitioned. Obviously, you know, Fox do need credit for agreeing, but you know, those guys are the ones who made the initial fight. That's the first point. Second point of directors, full license depends. Zack Snyder. Anyway, but
oh God, that's a bad.
Yeah, but you know what, guys? The lesson for me is not about directors; it's about films using the comic characters in the right way. And I think the key thing what we did here is more than the R-ratedness, more than the directors being given license to do the things that they wanted. It was making sure that these stories revolved concretely around these characters in a fantastic way. And funny enough, something I'm going to pick up on is, I think for me, this opened my eyes. If you read the Civil War comic right to its conclusion, you know something really important happens at the end of it, which didn't happen in the movie. And I'm not necessarily saying that the movie had to be a retelling of the comic. But my point is, this is kind of where I actually want to turn around and say to the MCU, will you start being brave, please? Will you start actually having the balls to be a little bit braver, because the quality of everything else they're doing is good. So take that last step. And I'm not saying do it in the R-rated or in the serious drama or the road movie style, but just there's a risk they haven't taken yet. And pretty soon they're going to be forced to take that risk, if nothing else, because their actors are getting too old.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people know what you're talking about when you say that.
Well, I'd agree. But the other risk they can take, and what they may need to take, and I think we can maybe come back and revisit this, but I think is once this phase is complete, then they're going to have to start thinking outside the box and diversifying and moving in other areas and introducing new characters anyway. Because people aren't tired of them, but you've used them a lot. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's only so many stories you can tell with the same characters. And as we know, and as comic book readers and whatnot, there's a huge amount that they don't use, you know. And I know they use the ones that have got popular and famous and commercial and everything else, but there's a huge back catalogue of work that they can always delve into. Marvel, yeah. You know, DC, everyone, you know. And I think it'd be good if they maybe do branch out a little bit and maybe do make some bold decisions. I don't think Marvel, for their credit, have made any bad decisions.
I agree.
In fairness, I think that is something that they are doing, because they've made no secret of the fact that the next phase of films focuses more on Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel than it does on Iron Man.
Yeah, I think they're just going to go out and bank as big as they can bank in the next couple of installments, and then they might start to see, you know, different things. I think Black Panther might be a slightly different style film, which I think we're really looking forward to. So, well,
Chris Evans has said again, the suggestion is that he's got two films left, which is going to be the two Infinity films, and then after that he's done, as in complete and finished, not renegotiating, because he'll have been doing it for a long time. And if you just look
I'm going to be strict on this pod for once. We're not going to move on to other areas, because otherwise we'll just go down a very slippery road and not talk about the films we're supposed to talk about.
Rory's got his daddy pants on.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I've got my Logan pants on, all ripped.
Oh, lovely.
moving very swiftly on.
Yeah.
That's not the direction I'm meant to go in at all. Fuck, I don't even know how to follow that. I think we want to talk a little bit. We've talked quite a lot about characters, and I think we're going to talk about the ending in due course. Are there any other characters you want to touch on, or should we talk about the action scenes? Because I think that they are quite important in the film.
To have an X-Men film like this, and the action isn't the biggest part, but that's tribute to it. That's a massive tribute to what a stellar film it is, that it doesn't need the action set pieces, even though it has got them.
Yeah.
Marco is pushing to record another podcast on this, but how long are we into this? About 50 minutes?
Yeah-ish.
I think we can squeeze this in. I think we'll come back and do... I think we'll do more regular podcasts. I think we might just do a podcast on I don't know, on a good discussion on certain topic points and stuff. So, but I think we've got enough time to. Well, that would be an incredible podcast, but I don't think we're going to just talk about our meat-eating habits. I think we'd offend the vegans.
Screw vegans. Vegans aren't really people.
Yeah, vegans have got superpowers, man. They've got superpowers. Have you not seen Scott Pilgrim? No vegans. No vegan diet. No vegan powers. I was trying to be a professional host. Yeah, what characters do you want to talk about, Marco?
Let me bring you back. I thought Donald Pierce was actually pretty cool. He plays it low key. I love his opening line. I have it cycling in my head. I've actually tried to find a TV spot where he says it because it's just such a cool. And also, it's like it's a perfect way to offend Logan because he just doesn't want to be associated with that idea because he just basically between him and Gabriela Lopez they're both greeted with the same disdain and profanity around the idea of being called the Wolverine. And also I thought we've already mentioned Caliban. I just wanted to say that the family at the farm, one of the things I love about that whole sequence is, you know, it hurts and it resonates so much because there's this weird little blind side because they make you emotionally invested in the family because you see their names, you see their faces, which is very different from, you know, us sympathizing with the people of Sokovia, for example. Yeah. And then, you know,
you go into the home.
And you're lulled
I
into
know,
the
you're in that home.
It's get so this personal.
False security. Yeah, and you get this false sense of security because all of a sudden you think the water pump confrontation is the big thing, and then it isn't. It's just,
certainly not. No.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I was going to say, Karen.
No. Completely, man. And I think that was, you know, like we did say before, how pivotal that scene was. But yeah, you're right. The water pump scene it changed your direction. It was a very clever, kind of subtle change they've got away with that. There's been no gunfire and Logan's
it was a few moment, wasn't it? It was like,
well, he's not had to draw his claws, and that would have kicked them out of the house, and there'd be a lot of, you think, oh yeah, they're just going to go back to bed and wake up in the morning and off they go. No, that's not at all what happens.
Not quite.
They do wake up for a brief moment, briefly. But it is quite a bold scene. It was a really bold scene, actually, and it was extreme violence that the film is kind of synonymous for. It's there's a lot of violence. I mean, the scene in the casino when Patrick Stewart hasn't taken his pills and he's having an episode, as it would be known, I guess, and he's potentially on the verge of killing a lot of people. That scene was magnificent. I saw when Logan is clawing his way through the hotel room and the guards are giving him the eyes to say, holy shit, I can't move and this guy is coming at me, and he's basically tearing them apart in slow motion. That was so violent, but it was incredible. And I just thought, that when it's resonating, you know, when the screen is shaking almost, and
it was nauseating, wasn't it?
It was, and and you felt like you couldn't stand it much more. You almost had to close your eyes after a while because you got the sense of what was really happening. And there's not many films or scenes that have done that to me, where I'm watching it at cinema and I went to see it in the IMAX because it was just amazing at 2D IMAX.
Yeah,
and that scene alone was just like, oh my god, this is. Brilliant. And it wasn't your full-blown high speed action scene. It was slow because of what was going on, but it was probably the most powerful action scene I've seen in the film for a long time. It was that scene, you know, that stole the action scenes for me because there was a lot of them, and the forest at the end and you know, the ones around Mexico but that one to me was just incredible. I mean, Stu, anything to add?
That's a pretty fair summary, really. It was one that you felt. I completely agree. You could feel it resonating through your bones, and it was uncomfortable to watch because it's making your eyes go a little bit funny. But that just puts you in it, doesn't it? And you're going, Jesus, imagine what this must have been like if you were actually there, and the look of terror in their eyes when they're looking, going, shit, what's he going to do to me? And they know they can't do anything. And then even Laura,
couldn't do anything.
Laura's just, she knows what she needs to do. And yeah, oddly powerful, considering, relatively speaking, Charles doesn't do anything. You know, he doesn't consciously do anything. It's all just a result of him not taking his pills.
And yeah, I know, exactly.
It's a big moment for Laura as well, because Logan tells her, doesn't he, before he goes out, make sure he has his pills. And she obviously doesn't, because he sort of has won her over with all of his talk of how he doesn't want them and stuff.
And they're quite sweet together, because they are very much like a granddad and a granddaughter, you know, and they're watching a Western together. And
oh, yeah.
And again, subtle references to things, but it's very clever, that scene, because you know, she gets the impression that she's in a safe kind of haven.
And she starts to come out of herself, doesn't she? She actually starts to act like a little girl. And what's interesting as well, if you actually read a synopsis about the Western that they're watching, it's the plot of Logan.
Yeah, no, I know. It's some ridiculously long film, really famous Western. I'm not a massive Western fan, I'll be perfectly honest. But
me neither, but I went and read a little synopsis about it, and it's like a retired gunslinger. He doesn't want to have to, you know, do what he used to do anymore, but something happens and he has to, so Shane has to get his guns out in the same way that Logan has to pop his claws. And
that to me is quite subtle. The one thing that I'm not, and this is my only slightly controversial viewpoint on the film, and we'll talk about this until the ending, and we'll do some questions if we've got time, is that X-24 is a very unsubtle way of the director getting across this is Logan looking in his mirror, you know. This is him looking at all the things he's done wrong in his life, in his heart, in his eyes. This is all the anger and the violence, you know. This is all the regrets he's got in a physical form.
He's battling against himself. It's what he could have become if he hadn't found Charles. You know, it's like the devil on his shoulder. He would have been a government-led killing machine, just an assassin for hire. But I really like what Marco said before about the paternal side of him. When he's skewered on the farm equipment and he's there and he's almost stroking his hair like, it's okay, it'll all be okay, it's fine. And that had sort of gone over my head. So I'm glad you've pointed that out, because it's nice to pick up on these little things.
Yeah, but just and that is true. But just as a kind of portrayal or a kind of imagery of himself, is it not a bit obvious?
It is a little bit. I must admit, if someone held a gun to my head and said, pick one thing that didn't work, I would probably say the X-24 thing, in fairness, not just because you've just mentioned it, because it was, like we said before, that Caliban was a subtle plot point. This was completely the opposite. This was as brazen as you can get. We need something for Logan to fight. Okay, let's basically have him fighting himself.
Yeah, and I just thought it was just a little bit for what had been such a clever and smart and intelligent film that made you, you know, really play with your emotions. This is the one thing that took me out of it a little bit. And I, you know, this is me being critical and trying to be honest, but. Marco, do you agree, or have you got a slightly different take on it?
Of course I have a different take. What do you expect?
Well, I know, but that's the whole point.
No. It worked for me because of the whole theme around this idea of, you know, being a weapon versus being a person, number one. Number two, I think it's very important that he did look the same, because I think just that moment as Logan enters the house and he's like, because Logan would usually rush in there and like try and figure what's going on, and he's stunned. He's just taken aback at this, like, hang on, that's me. And then that almost sort of brings him into that emotional panic around, you know, Charles's state of mind. It wasn't me. And I thought that was important in terms of the narrative of the characters. But I think the most critical thing that why it's important around that exposition is the fact that in that last fight, you know, that fight on the farm was brutal. Like, you know, you think, okay, well, Wolverine should have the measure of this. And then you suddenly realize just how proficient a fighter X-24 is. And at the end of it, you just know this is one of those fights Logan's not going to come back from. You just know that last fight, Logan, by distracting X-24 and allowing the kids to escape, he sends himself to death. So I thought it was quite important that it's got to be something that he can't beat. And ironically, it's the very thing he's fighting with it, because X-24 is just a symbol, not just for the weapon Logan thinks he is, but also for the weapon that, that Logan desperately wants Laura not to become. And that's the whole power of that last line that he says, because
don't be what they made you.
Don't be what they made you. So Logan, and maybe this is a good segue into the death, but Logan effectively doesn't want Laura to sort of be trapped without the same choice he felt that was denied to him. And effectively his death enables her to get the choice that he didn't have, because he basically says to her, look, regardless of what they created you to be, you've seen what that thing was. Don't be that thing. Be you, be something different. Be, you know, choose for yourself to be something different instead of this, you know. So in other words, literally choose between Laura or X-23 implying, you know, the code, the mindless machine bred in the lab versus Laura the person with emotions and depth and consideration.
He wants her to be human, you know. He wants her to have humanity. Yeah, essentially, I mean, in plain terms, in layman's terms, it's he's given his life so she can live hers, you know, and that's what he does. He's doing the ultimate sacrifice. And that is the most powerful thing about the end of the film. He is dying. You know, that's the one thing to say. He obviously injects himself with the serum and it gives him a temporary boost. But
and how fucking
all throughout,
good is that? After seeing him sort of struggle and he can't
doing
do anything.
The old flying claw.
And then he rolls back the years and he's bloody leaping at people and stabbing them right through the face.
I love the leap.
It's
just
insane.
Amazing. Yeah, it is insane. But the way he goes, I mean, you know, through the tree, and it's just, you know, I mean, Laura obviously ultimately, well, she saves not his life, but she saves her own, you know, by using the bullet, and that's powerful in itself, that she's killing him in a sense. Do you know what I mean? It's got a lot of things you can take references from, and there's a lot of ways to look at it, and a lot of different kind of things you can have discussions about that ending in particular.
Because that was always Logan's way out, wasn't it? So that no matter what else happened in life, he was always going to have that golden ticket to get out of things with the adamantium bullet.
Yeah. Ironically, she gave him the best choice, though.
If he had ever decided to kill himself like that, he might never have got the chance to make peace with her. And like you say, right at the end, it's the only time that she ever really accepted him as his father, and he actually accepted her as a real daughter. And had he died in battle or something, or he never would have got that.
Yeah, I think ultimately at the end, it's the acceptance, isn't it? It's the acceptance he's going to die, the acceptance that she's going to live a life in hopefully safety, do you know what I mean, across the border.
And surrounded by her friends as well.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not going to have to live as he did, where he was very much on his own for a long, long time.
No, it's that difference between isolation and loneliness that he always wanted to be. You know, he's always running off towards that. He never really wanted to embrace the family or embrace that life because, you know, I know it's different in the comics, but it's not something he could commit to in terms of the films. And I think that's why Hugh Jackman is incredible. And I think, to me, the most important thing is they gave him the death that he deserved, and they gave him the film that he deserved. I mean, the cross turning it on its side into an X was probably the most powerful piece of imagery I've seen in a film. And I keep saying this, but there's a lot of parts of this film that I've not seen films do so well in a very long time. But that imagery was just stunning. I mean, that really did get me.
Yeah, that was a real lump in the throat moment. Because she obviously knew, without having ever spoken to it, it was his last moment as an X-Man, sort of. You know, it was like, you know, he hadn't referred to himself as Wolverine or the Wolverine the whole way through, but in that last moment, she was able to send him out as the Wolverine with an X on him. It was very, very, very strong.
So, at risk of sounding a little bit like Kay, the interpretation I got from that was, because it's funny, one could look at the whole angle he takes with the comic book in Eden as almost this like flippant shot towards the popcorn formula of what we see the MCU and the DCEU trying to be. And Mangold was quite expressive in some interviews that I listened to around saying it's not actually about that. It's that you know, the comic mythology is really important in this film because it's actually part of the same angle of hope, of wonderment that Xavier wants Logan to think about. So his death has meaning because of her, because she basically helps him re-enter that mythology, the Eden. She helps him become one of the X-Men again. Yeah. And that's why that last moment is so powerful, because what you actually realize for the whole film, it's called Logan. Like, he hasn't been the Wolverine for ages. And I mean, it's just, you know, one of the most precious moments at the end is when you see Black Bolt's spiritual successor, the kid with the electric skills.
He's got
a Wolverine toy, like you know, with the whole yellow suit and everything. And I mean, like, it's just, it comes full circle. It's beautiful. There's no other word for it.
It is a really, you know, prominent scene and touching scene, and like I said about the director, it's nice that they didn't do anything stupid. There wasn't the hint of the claw coming through the rocks, or do you know what I mean? There wasn't anything that took away from what it was, and it's a true ending to it, which I think is what it deserved. We could go on for a very long time, and there are a lot of other things that we could probably discuss, but I think we're going to have to be good. I think we're quite a way into this part. I think we're going to do 3 questions and try and answer one each and keep it brief if we can. And then we're going to wrap up and we'll revisit and do, I don't know, I want to do more pods, just loads more. So maybe we'll do another pod in next week and discuss, I don't know, something imaginative and fun, because this is always good. So, Stu, have you got any questions do you want to read out
that were kindly
given to us on our Twitter feed?
Let me go. We did actually get quite a few came in, so thanks everyone for sending them in. It's nice to see people actually give a shit.
Yeah, I'm going to do quickly one. So
go on, you go first if you've got one lined up.
Good friend of ours, Guy Drinkle, host of the One Up podcast, he asked, would it be cool if there was a black and white version of this? I think the director, from what I listened to, hadn't thought about it, but I think after being suggested it, he's going to go and pitch it to Fox, and that's quite interesting if that does come out in some form on a DVD, Blu-ray.
Well, supposedly they were pitching it for a full cinematic release.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've not seen Mad Max, I know Marco has, Mad Max released a black and chrome edition, which is the same thing, and such a vibrant film that, again, it's got similar kind of vibes as this, you know, because it's on the go all the time, and a lot of it's dry and arid and desert and all that. It works extremely well, and it looks incredible, and it doesn't take away from the spectacle, and I think it would really work. I'm a big person on cinematography and all that, as I always ramble on about, but I do think this film was shot beautifully and looks stunning, and I think for some reason the black and white element and all the links to the westerns and all that kind of stuff of the past, I think it work, and I think they actually will do it. I think the Mad Max thing did really well, and I think people would gravitate towards watching this in black and white, and it could be stunning.
Okay, the one I've chosen, I'm gonna go with Adrian Ordonez.
Yeah,
first of all,
question.
If you don't cry watching this film, are you even human? No. If you didn't shed at least a single tear at this, then you have a heart of granite, Mr. Greenfield.
I had a couple, but I wasn't in bawling in tears, but it hit me hard. No, man, it's fine. It's not about that. It just depends what mood you're in at the time. But no, it's an incredibly emotional, hard-hitting film, isn't it?
Yeah, and the second part to his question is one that a lot of people have been asking. Where do the X-Men go from here?
Now that X-23?
Well, you'd think logically.
X-Force, yeah.
X-Force is the next direct tie-in to X-Men. We already know that there's going to be, Cable is going to be in Deadpool 2. So that's Cable, Deadpool, 2 members of X-Force. Domino is going to be in there. She's another member. And X-23. So you've already got 4 out of the maybe 5 members that you'd want in. But where do the X-Men films go? I don't think X-Men can go anywhere other than backwards now, because
it's going to reboot, I think.
Well, the next film in the prequel franchise, you know, with Sophie Turner as Jean Grey, they're doing the Phoenix storyline again, but I think they're actually going to do it properly this time. They're not going to do the really stupid, crappy way that the Bryan Singer films did it, where it was really half-assed. I really hope my major aim for the future of the X-Men franchise is I want them to stick with X-23. As Marco said, they've shown a brave quality here. Stick with it. You've just killed off one of the most iconic comic book characters ever. Certainly, you would say the most iconic X-Men character. Stick with it. You've set yourself on a path now. Keep going. Hopefully, we can stick with Daphne Keane. But if not, recast with somebody who's maybe 4 or 5 years older. And I want to see an X-23 film where she's now been living for a while with her friends, and she's now a little bit more comfortable with her powers. Maybe she's not formally taken on the mantle yet of the Wolverine, but I want to at least see her in another film.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to see if I can ask Marco a question. Let's have a look.
I think he'll let you.
A lot of them aren't that director's questions. This will piss Marco off. Where does this rank among all comic films?
I knew you were going to answer comic films.
What was your favourite action scene / favourite non-action scene? Let's just ask, what was your favourite scene in this film?
I can answer all three very quickly. Where does it rank? I think it's upper with the Dark Knight in its own section. It doesn't deserve to be compared to Fangasm.
Don't put it in the box. Different. Stop it, putting it in boxes, people. Yeah.
Nobody puts Logan in the corner.
But for me personally, Dark Knight first, Logan second. That's how much I like this film.
Wow.
Favorite action scene, without a doubt, the farm, because it's so freaking brutal, although shout to Vegas for obvious reasons. Favorite non-action scene, so many. Toilet scene, asking Xavier to take his meds, the Pierce introduction, Logan bashing his truck was so funny, the argument in the truck with Laura. But I think the last bit is my favorite scene, because it's come full circle, it's very fitting, it's very powerful, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. As I said, this has been, I hope we've done it justice. I know a lot of people are hopefully listening to this podcast because we do truly love this film. And I think we really, ultimately, all we want is people to go and watch this film and appreciate it. And then if you want to come and listen to us, talk about it and wax lyrical about it, we're all good with that. We're going to be back quite soon. We've got some really good stuff coming up because Guardians is out next month. So we get to preview that, which is really, really cool because I'm excited about Guardians Volume 2. Super excited. And we're going to talk about Iron Fist quite soon, I think.
Yeah, note from Guardians 2, did you see that Mr. Gunn has been dropping ever so subtle hints that he might be interested in doing a third one?
Oh, I think he will do a third one.
He's always previously said that he wasn't going to, because he finds it such an exhaustive process, and he's been doing this in total for six years.
He loves it, man. He gets his kicks off it. So I don't see him turning it down if it comes about. So.
No, he basically did a little, I think it was a Facebook Live thing the other day, and he pretty much said, I'm going away for a bit to have a bit of a rest, me and the missus, the cat and the dog. But then he sort of, without actually saying it, he really sort of hinted that Guardians Volume 3 was going to be on the cards at some point.
I must admit, just for audience listenership, if you're not realised by now, Stu is the worst person at wrapping up a podcast, if there ever was one. He literally will go off on the randomest topic of conversation.
That's not random, that's totally relevant.
It's in a news section at the beginning, but we're trying to wrap up a fucking podcast.
Well, you are, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not presenting, making it hard to wrap up.
Is there anything for us to plug? Some articles from Joey, which are just incredible, especially one about X-23 or Laura.
Yeah, his X-23 one's a very good read. I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't know about the character on there, and I've just been editing his latest one about Cable, which is fucking huge. It's like War and Peace.
It's like that guy is just a machine, man. Yeah. He's incredible. People don't always read stuff. I know it's quite hard, and we don't have the dulcet tones of Trevor Downey narrating for us as much as we'd love to. And you don't want to listen to me and Stu anymore. Just talk
shit. I don't want to fucking listen to me and you.
I know, exactly.
But hang on, maybe Joey's doing an ebook. Joey's doing an ebook. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like all these are going into the AI Comic Pod ebook with illustrations by Stuart.
It's incredible.
And I've got my Robin article, which I've finished. I'm just waiting for it to be published, which, if I must admit, it's very good. I'm very pleased with it.
Guilty admission of me, I didn't write a Logan review. I just didn't think I could do it justice. I'll be perfectly honest. I started to write one and I really struggled with it. But
I think it's easier to talk about it because it is.
It's an emotive film, and I've said the word magnificent about 24 times on this pod, and I don't think I'd want to write it down 24 times. So anything to plug from you, Marco? An excellent podcast recently that I listened to you might want to plug.
Yeah, well, there was the Spotlight appearance with you. There was there's the main AI show. Do I want to plug anything? Just the AI Comic Pod. I love this pod. I love supporting it. I love these films. I love this material. I love these comics. And I'm glad that even if it's just the three people, we have a voice.
He didn't say he loved us, did he? All that shit. And he didn't say he loved us. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Blame Marco. Right. On that note, honestly, brilliant pod, one of my favourites, probably my favourite pod actually I've ever recorded. So thanks very much for listening. We will be back very soon, and hopefully we'll do a few more of these and do something slightly outside the box. I'm putting us outside the box, but I'm not, you know, the film. Right, cheers, guys. Speak soon. Thanks, bye-bye.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.